There's a feeling you get when you step outside your comfort zone. It's excitement, but it's also fear. It's pleasure, but it's tinged with trepidation. What if it all goes wrong? What if your worst fears are realized and this all ends in disaster? Of course, different people have different ideas of what a comfort zone is. For some, staying in a resort that only has 4 stars would be considered an adventure. For others, a trek through the Congolese jungle in search of mountain gorillas would barely even register as a thrill. It actually doesn't matter how hardcore you are, because this is what travel is all about. Taking chances, having new experiences, discovering things about yourself and the world that you never knew were possible. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the Traveller.com.au podcast. Today we're talking about adventure, but it's a specific type of adventure. We're talking about taking risks when you travel, about pushing yourself that little bit further than you ever thought you would go. Joining me today for a collective step outside our comfort zones are two of my favourite Traveller.com.au writers. First, he's a Sydney-based writer who once took a Bollywood dance class and made the mistake of letting someone film it, Rob McFarlane. Hi, Rob.
Good to be back.
Great to have you back. Next up, she's a long-time collaborator on Flight of Fancy and someone who has sworn that she will never go camping ever again in her entire life, Uta Jonker.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Uta. Now, guys, let's talk about the concept of comfort zones. Is this something that's different for everybody?
Absolutely. I mean, if you chat to a base jumper, I'm sure their comfort zone is probably a little different to most people's. And
I actually met a base jumper. I was doing a Via Ferrata in Switzerland, which is a kind of thing where you're sort of clipped on to the side of the mountain by a sort of steel wire, and you're kind of just clinging to the side of this cliff, really. There was a 1 kilometre drop below me. And I was sort of clinging on for dear life and staring down at the abyss. And this base jumper comes along and he's like, "Hi, how you doing?" Just wearing his kit, about to leap off the cliff. and he was looking at me and he was like, "Oh man, I would be so scared if I was doing that."
Really?
I was like, "What?" And he was like, "Yeah, if I don't have a parachute on, I just feel so scared."
Wow.
And I was like, "Right, okay, good to meet you." And he leapt off the cliff. So I was outside of his comfort zone.
That's bizarre, isn't it? And I guess that proves the whole point, is that everyone has a slightly different and these weird sort of associations with what makes them comfortable and what makes them not comfortable. So for him, it was obviously a parachute.
Right.
So,
yeah. How about you, Uta? Has your comfort zone changed over the years?
Look, I think not only do people have different comfort zones, you have different comfort zones at different times of your life.
Yeah.
And it's funny, when you were telling the Via Ferrata story, I was thinking back to the days. I can remember quite a narrow window in my life, but it was there when I thought, yeah, I might do the Via Ferrata. Yeah, that sounds interesting. These days you could not pay me enough money to do it.
Yeah.
So on the other hand, then when I just say that, I mean, I did parasailing on the island of Réunion, which sort of floats off Mauritius.
Yeah.
Which is kind of way outside my comfort zone. So I guess often it's about the moment too.
Yeah.
And what you're willing, how you're feeling that day and what seems like a good, well, that's the classic, isn't it? Seems like a good
time.
I think there's that temptation to always think of comfort zones as sort of adventurous activities like parasailing or Via Ferrata, but I can remember the first time I went to like a fancy restaurant, like a 3 Michelin star restaurant to review
for
it.
Sure.
And that's incredibly intimidating. Mm-hmm. And there's 17 sets of knives and forks and stuff that you can and can't eat on the plate. And so I think that can be just as intimidating as jumping out of a plane, you know, for a skydive. So it's just all about getting more familiar with unfamiliar circumstances.
And the other one that's a big one is, because I do a lot of travel on my own, I get asked to write pieces about it quite regularly. Mm-hmm. And every time I do, all these people write in and go, thank you. I thought I could never do this on my own. And I'm kind of like, you can. Of course you can. Break that boundary.
Yeah. I mean, Rob, you seem to be getting more and more adventurous as time goes on.
Much to my mother's distress.
You were once the 5-star traveller, but these days you're trekking to find gorillas.
And it's been quite interesting. I mean, my comfort zones used to be very small. I used to have very low thresholds in lots of regions of my life.
Yeah.
And what I found is that they just make better stories. So you know, when you go and stay in the flash 5-star hotel, you go and do the spa stuff, and it's enjoyable, but it doesn't make a great story, not only for work, but just sort of anecdotally personally. Whereas when you go trekking to find mountain gorillas, or you go rafting, they're just a better story, and you want to be one of those people that's just got good stories to tell.
So increasingly
I'll search that stuff out now, definitely.
Uta, tell us about the bell curve of boundary pushing.
When you start traveling at whatever age that is, you tend to move very steeply out of your comfort zone, because wherever you're going, it's new, it's different.
I mean, the mere act of traveling is getting outside your comfort zone, isn't
it? Exactly. I mean, you know, you've never stood in as many queues as you have till you go into an airport, you know.
Yeah.
But so by its nature, there's this huge rush of experiences, and that's kind of intoxicating, and you're going, yeah, I want more of this, and you go, yeah, okay, I'll try the next thing, and then I'll try the next thing, and then I'll add some weird activities.
You want to push it further, don't you?
Yeah, it gets quite addictive. So you've got this quite steep rise in your boundary pushing. And then at some point, you sort of even out a bit, and you kind of go, you know, I feel quite comfortable. I don't need to go for another slum tour, or I don't need to hike another mountain in the rain, or I don't need to, I'm feeling quite comfortable with this. And then there's a point at which you sort of reach peak experience, and you kind of go, I've experienced a lot. And you start thinking, I could still go have new experiences, enjoy new things. I don't need to push it so much. It's, I mean, like Ben, I know I've told you before that when I was younger, I hired a motorbike and rode around Jamaica. And I look back and, you know, it was fun. I had a great time. I look back and I think, what the hell was I doing? It's not so much, I mean, A, I'd never ridden a motorbike before, which is kind of like, yeah, okay, that was a good idea. In the event, it was fine. But also, B, it's not just about you. It's about the other drivers. You know, and when you're young, you don't think about that. You go, A, I could do anything.
Invincible.
Yeah.
Do you think after a while you have to make a conscious effort to remind yourself that it's good to get outside your comfort zone, and that you do discover new things and find out that some things that might scare you are actually totally fine and enjoyable?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it does become a conscious effort. I mean, I think we probably do it more because for work we need to, you know, we need to do those experiences. Yeah. But every time I do it, I'm reminded that, yeah, this is a great thing. As soon as you start to feel a little anxious or a little apprehensive about something, that's normally a pretty good sign that that's something that you, within reason, should do, because you know at the end of it, you're going to, that stuff's just good for the soul, you know, it's just good, just makes you feel like a better person, and you faced up to a challenge and done it. And so you probably don't want your entire holiday doing that, but certainly choose, you know, two or three things where you think, oh yeah, that's going to make me feel a little like uncomfortable, but I know I'm going to get through it, and I know I'm going to feel better afterwards.
I was having a think about the first time I was sort of pushed outside my comfort zone when I was traveling. And it was just traveling. I was 17 years old. I went away by myself for the first time. And just getting on the plane and going to another place where I had to fend for myself and figure out everything out for myself, that was way outside my comfort zone. And it was amazing. That was what got me hooked on travel, really, that sensation of challenging yourself and getting through it and realizing that you're capable of these things that you never thought were possible.
And, of course, that was back in the days before phones, when you had everything at the touch of your hands. I mean, we've got a great security device.
Late 1800s.
Just awesome.
It was a black and white.
Often when we think about getting outside your comfort zone, you think about bungee jumping or skydiving or something like that. But I think, you know, far more often than that is just the normal everyday stuff, like going to a restaurant by yourself, which a lot of people find really intimidating the first few times they've done it. I mean, Uta, you travel on your own a lot. You must have had to start doing that at some point.
Yeah, I've got to say, it's not something that has ever worried me in particular, but I know from conversations that lots and lots of people have this fear. And it's funny that sometimes the boundaries we really need to push are the real internal ones, the ones that have been with us since primary school you know, I'm going to sit here and everyone thinks I'm Nigel No
Everyone's
Friends.
Everyone's going to stare at me.
Yeah. And it's like, no one else cares.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And my experience, particularly in good restaurants, is if you go by yourself, the staff fall all over themselves to kind of entertain you.
Yeah. And it's also a really good opportunity to be present. I mean, there's so few times where you just genuinely get to eat a meal and not think about something else, not watch TV, not speak to anyone else. And so if you're in a good restaurant, you really want to savour that experience and savour that food. And I would suggest that you've got more of a chance of doing that on your own than if you're with someone and you can chat away and you've forgotten the course that you've just eaten. So it's also, you know, think how much people strive for mindfulness and being present nowadays. And so doing something like that.
Some people
talk about it a lot, put it that way.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good opportunity to do that, as well as sort of pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. And I think with that, some places make that easier than others. So I think the US does a really good job of that. So you can go into almost any restaurant in the US. There's always a bar there.
Yep.
There's always people sitting there on their own. Yep. You'd never feel quite as much of a Nigel No Mates as, I mean, I'm not sure I would do that in Sydney quite as easy as I would do it in the US. I think
France is also great for that. People go out to eat by themselves all the time.
Yeah.
Japan, there's a lot of counter seating and it's designed for people to come in and sit there by themselves. It's no problem.
Yeah.
Do you go out to bars by yourself when you're traveling?
I have. And
is that outside your comfort zone? Do you feel a little bit weird about it?
Yeah, I think it's a bit like going to the cinema on your own. It's one of those things where you just sort of...
At least the cinema's dark and no one can see you. At a bar, you're quite obviously Nigel Nomates on your own.
And again, I think the US does a good job of that. Their bars are great, their staff are very friendly, and so it's much easier to do that there.
I still feel a little bit weird about it. I do it because I want to go out, and you know, bar culture is a big part of traveling, but it very much depends on the country you're in. I still feel a little bit awkward about going out and just nursing a beer by myself.
I sweaty tried as a woman.
Right, I'm sure.
So it is the thing that if, and like you, you know, I agree, bar culture is a big part of it. You want to see it, but you got to have your armor on, because even if people are being nice, people are going to approach you, men are going to try and pick you up, and sometimes you're just not in the mood for it, and hang out at a bar and have a drink, and that is very difficult to do.
Yeah, that unfortunately never happens to me, so I've spent a lot of time sitting in bars waiting for those approaches.
Come on, hit on me.
Never.
And go.
It never happens.
You need to wear your Yes, I'm Available t-shirt.
Yes, I'll try that next time.
What about, Rob, you mentioned one of the things that makes you feel uncomfortable is a lot of classes that you can take when you're traveling that you have no idea what you're doing. For example, Bollywood dancing.
Exactly. Yeah.
But obviously you still force yourself to do it.
Yeah, again, because it normally makes for a pretty entertaining tale. So I was in India and I was actually traveling with a girlfriend. It was a work trip. Yeah. And one of the options to do one of these Bollywood dance classes. So we had a female and a male instructor, and they taught us one of the dances from a Bollywood movie.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend at the time had been a step aerobics instructor when she was younger, so she was just all over, like, being in beat and, you know, had a really good sense of rhythm. And I wasn't, and I foolishly let someone videotape it, and I was basically a step behind. You know, I was always facing the wrong way. Everyone was always facing me. It was horrible, but it made for a great story, and it was a great insight into that culture, because a lot of people will learn that for Indian weddings, and you know, it was a great way of learning a bit more about that sort of thing. So I've done a few of those.
It's changed the light bulb, pat the dog, isn't it?
There's a lot of that. I was always patting the light bulb and changing the dog.
What about you? Do you do classes, like cooking classes or anything that you're not really comfortable with?
Yeah, but I kind of think the good thing about classes, it's a license to stuff it up. Because just by the fact that you're signing up for it, you go, I've got no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so I recently did a calligraphy class, and, you know, I failed stick figures. I am really hopeless at art, and I really enjoy it, you know. So it's kind of, the class is the safe area for me to do it where no one can say that's not good enough, because it's like, I paid you to help you with this. Yeah.
To compliment me on my terrible calligraphy.
Don't mock me.
So I did a, you know, went to this Ming era pavilion and did a calligraphy class, and I was thinking, oh, this is going to be really hard. And you know what it's all about? It's about literally going with the flow and getting in the moment. It's meditation with a brush.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. Awesome.
What about you?
I do things all the time, but I'm not classes. I'm totally comfortable cooking. That's fine with me. I find going to bathhouses are a thing that I'm always uncomfortable doing, and I always force myself to do because I end up enjoying it, and it becomes a great story purely because I have absolutely no idea what's going on in these places. Things like Russian bathhouses and Korean bathhouses where you're not sure of the etiquette and the rules, and
you've got a towel and you're not sure where it goes.
Exactly. You don't know if you should be naked or not. You know, you don't know if you should be showering or bathing or what. But yeah, I always feel totally uncomfortable and just really, really pleased that I've done it afterwards.
I mean, I think there's a whole bunch of those sort of cultural things, isn't it? And Japan's a really good example of that. So the sort of onsen culture.
Yeah, almost everything in Japan. Just walking into a restaurant in Japan. Totally. Because often, you know, there's no windows and there's just this wooden door and you're not even sure if it is a restaurant or whether you'll be welcome when you get in there. And it's a really uncomfortable feeling. And usually it works out really well. Occasionally you'll just get turned away.
Yeah, the whole of Japan is kind of like exquisitely choreographed.
Yeah.
And you're sort of blundering in.
You're like Rob in a Bollywood dance class.
Exactly. Randomly patting people.
At least a step or two behind.
This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel. For some, being intrepid means crashing through the jungle in search of gorillas. For others, it's trying street food for the first time, or bunking down on an overnight train with a dozen snoring strangers. Whatever form it takes, intrepid is an attitude, a willingness to take yourself far from the comforts of home, embrace difference, and open yourself up to new cultures and experiences. Be curious. Challenge, fearless, alive. Find out how at intrepidtravel.com.
I'm here with Uta Jonker and Rob McFarlane. We're chatting about getting outside our comfort zones. What about those experiences, though, that are actually genuinely dangerous? Because we've talked about the kind of, you know, the fairly easy ones that make you feel a little bit uncomfortable. But I, for instance, I rode a scooter around Vietnam a couple of months ago. And it's a thing, I ride a scooter in Sydney, so I thought that I was totally comfortable with it. I thought it'd be a great idea, lots of fun. And so I rented a scooter and went out on it. And, well, I know what Vietnamese traffic is like. I knew it was going to be fairly badass. But then we picked up the bike, my girlfriend and I, and pulled out onto the street, and I just realized, oh my God, what have I done? This is completely insane. There is just traffic everywhere. There are people coming at you from all sides. You know, it's kind of like playing Frogger or, you know, some other computer game where there's just things jumping out at you and you're swerving around them all the time. And it was nuts. There was a second there where I thought, I've bitten off too much here. It's more than I can chew. I'm in a lot of trouble. It ended up being an amazing experience. As soon as we got out of Saigon, life was good. It was beautiful out there. You get to see parts of the country you would never see unless you had that mode of transport. But just that first few hours, really, of driving around Saigon, I thought, this is too much. Something bad is going to happen here. Yeah, have you guys done that? Have you gotten into really dangerous situations?
Yeah, I've had a few of those. mostly in bars. I've done quite a few rafting trips over the years, and there's certainly rafting the Zambezi in Africa and the Nile are two that stand out as being just genuinely terrifying. And you know, you're going to flip in those situations, and then you're underwater, and they always say you're going to spend far longer underwater than you're probably comfortable with, but you know, it's okay. Yeah. You know, you're going to survive.
Yep.
And there's times where you think, you know, I genuinely might not come out of that. So there's... Yeah. But you do, and again, you feel invincible afterwards. So there's, still worth doing, but there's been a couple where I just thought, horse riding's another one. Actually, I've done quite a few horse riding.
Oh, I'm the same. I'm a terrible horse rider. I get talked into that all the time.
Yeah. Just being on this thing, which you don't really properly have control over.
That's exactly right.
I did one in Africa, like an African safari, where you're sort of galloping with, you know, zebra and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot of, you're on a wild animal, and you're surrounded by other wild animals.
And there's a lot of hooves involved.
There's
a lot
of hooves and potential, implications. Yeah. So there's been a few of those where certainly at the start you think this was a terrible idea, but you normally sort of settle into it, and it's, as I say, it's a good story at the end.
Normally,
of it.
Yeah.
Well, you have just reminded me of a feat of great daring that I had completely forgotten about, which is how boundary pushing I am. I just leave them in my dust. So last time I was at Victoria Falls, we had the opportunity to go and swim in what's called the Devil's Pool right at the top of the falls.
Right.
So water is rushing past you and falling over the edge. You can touch the rocks that are the bit where the water falls over the
and
edge.
And that's a drop of, what, a couple of 100 metres?
Yeah. And, you know, there's no good landing there.
Right.
And in high season, elephants get swept over there.
Wow.
Now, this is obviously, they don't do it with people in high season. They take it in low season. And I wasn't sure whether I was going to do it or not because, you know, the adult part of my brain was going, that's a really stupid idea. But everyone else seemed okay with it. Was going, no, we do this all the time. It's fine. And I sort of went, I'm staying in a 5-star hotel. They don't want to kill their guests. They wouldn't do it if it wasn't a good idea. And so I went.
I love that Western way of thinking where we think, well, people are doing it.
And this is the thing, isn't it? This is the thing about age, that you look back at all those things you did that were fine, but could have gone catastrophically wrong. And you go, I wouldn't do that again. And so I went and sat in this pool of water right on the edge of Victoria Falls. And the first 35 seconds, I didn't breathe. And then I kind of went, well, I haven't fallen over yet, and began to relax. And actually had a really good time and didn't think about it again until, you know, I was telling the story to someone a few months later and I went, that probably wasn't the brightest idea. So, you know, I say now quite confidently, no, I wouldn't do that again. But, you know, if I'm there and everyone's
going,
come on.
Yeah, and there's a lot of peer pressure with that sort of stuff, isn't there?
So, there is.
I remember, because that's Livingston Island, isn't it, that you go to?
Yeah.
And I was there in, I guess, low rainfall, so you couldn't get to Devil's, or maybe it was high, so you couldn't get to Devil's Pool. But what the guy did is he said, oh, well, do you want to look out over the falls? And so there's this, because you know how that island goes right up to the edge of it. And so you go to the edge of the island and he holds your hand you essentially lean out over the falls while he's sort of holding you from behind. And so you're putting your entire life and trust in this guy who you've only met sort of 10 minutes before. And that was another moment where I thought, oh, you know, he could have sneezed. I mean, he could have had some weird spasm and then boom, I was gone. So.
Well, this is the thing for us. We're sort of sitting there. There's a tiny underwater ledge of rock that you sort of rest your back against. And, you know, chatting and sort of feeling like we are the kings of the jungle. And I turned around, and one of our guides, you know, in that way, the guides just, when you're doing nothing, they're just doing nothing. He was just walking along this underwater ledge. You know, anything could have swept him over every surface.
What if there's like a freak storm in the Congo? And a whole lot of water just suddenly
elephant
comes
scared, come wash it down.
What if he gets a cramp in his foot?
So I guess when it comes to food is a big thing that people have to push themselves out of their comfort zone for. I travelled with an English guy who did not want to push himself out of his food comfort zone. We travelled around Laos and he insisted on just eating ham sandwiches the whole time. And weirdly enough, got really sick. Okay. Have you guys found that you have to really push yourself when you travel
Look, I'm big at just sinking your teeth in and giving it a try. And it's like, oh, what are those? Bamboo worms. No idea what they taste like. Give me one.
Oh, yeah?
Tastes like prawn crackers. Fantastic.
Really? Okay.
There's lots of delicious
food. Were they cooked worms or were they raw?
Still rolling around. No. They were cooked. They were crunchy
okay.
bastards.
That sounds better. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I draw the line at eating live animals.
Okay.
It's not my bad.
Right.
But otherwise, no. I'm pretty good. I'm trying to think of something that
I had a prawn in Japan just a couple of days ago, actually. It was at a quite a high-end sushi place, and they brought the prawn over to the table or put it on the counter bench in front of me just so that I could see that it was still moving around. And then they, did business, did what had to be done, filleted the prawn, put it on top of some rice and put it in front of me, and it flipped itself off the rice, and they had to pick it up and put it back on there again. Like, this is disturbingly fresh. There's fresh and there's disturbingly fresh.
Yeah, I've had that in Korea with seafood, and it's like
octopus.
I'll just wait till it stops twitching. Okay.
How about you, Rob? I mean, being English, you're a pretty adventurous eater anyway.
Oh, very adventurous. Potatoes. I'll have them mashed. All sorts. That's probably been one of my biggest challenges is trying to get out of my comfort zone with food because I grew up in a pretty restrictive sort of traditional English diet.
Right.
And so even now, for me to order something other than a pad thai at a Thai restaurant, that's a pretty big deal. And so I
are there things that you just will turn your nose up at and not touch?
Any sort of insect. I just have a real problem with insects.
So crunchy bar snacks. Honestly, anything you try.
But when it's in your mouth and it's still moving, I mean, that whole thing just really, really freaks me out. Japan, I find, has a lot of these sort of delicacies where I think it's sea urchin where they sort of like just chop the top off it and it's still.
Dip it out and it's yellow.
It's still
and
like
delicious.
Still
it's really tasty.
Cooked and it's still moving. And that I just can't. There's a mental thing in my head that even if it tastes delicious, if my head is saying that's still alive or it's come from a certain place, I can't remedy those two things. So I'm still, and I have extremely low threshold of spicy food, so I have to really labor that with people.
I never traveled together. We were in Canada, so we were safe.
There's not a hint of spice
there's not been a single chili used in that country in a long time.
Yes. So that is definitely a challenge for me, the food side of it.
Do you think this idea of boundary pushing and getting outside your comfort zone, has it changed the way that you guys travel over the years? Do you think is it something that you think consciously about, or is it just something that takes care of itself?
It's an interesting question. Look, I know that my most basic requirement for a trip is I need to be able to sleep well at night. And so I'm really fussy about my accommodation.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't have to be 5-star. It doesn't hurt if it's 5-star. It doesn't have to be.
We'll accept 5-star.
Has to be comfortable and quiet. Mm-hmm. And if I've got that covered, anything else I'm pretty much up for. You want to put me on a train in India for 3 nights, fine. Done that. You know, you want to send me out, I'll eat the food you've got, I won't tie myself to a narrow metal string and go climbing up ladders or down ladders in mountains. But apart from that, I'm pretty good. So that's my thing. I know the thing that I need to check off, and then I'm free to indulge other things and stretch myself in other ways.
Yeah.
That's what works for me.
Rob, when you look back at how you first travelled, how has that changed to now?
Oh, very different.
Yeah.
And I would say I specifically look for that stuff now because it just makes better stories. So I know that the story would end up being better because I've pushed myself to do something. And I think also people can relate to that often when they're traveling.
Love to read about you making a fool of yourself.
And also it's an easy way to get sort of humor in because it's normally sort of self-deprecating.
Yeah.
And so I've always had a massive problem with heights, and I still do have a massive problem with heights. Mm. And so whenever the opportunity comes up to do something,
I should point out that Rob actually closed his eyes when saying that as well.
This is a very high chair. Yeah. And so I remember I went to Cape Town and they have the world's highest abseil there, where you abseil off the top of Table Mountain. And the abseil itself is only maybe 120 metres, but you're 1,000 metres above sea level. So when you first back out over that ledge, you've just got this, you know, vertiginous drop, basically.
Yeah.
And I was terrified. I mean, I was literally physically shaking. Right. And the worst thing, and this is a bit of a spoiler alert if anyone decides to do this, but as you go over the edge, the guy at the top said to me, as I'd sort of embarked on it, I hope you like surprises. Right. Now, no one wants to hear that when you've just backed over an edge.
No.
And what it turns out is that 50 metres down, the rock face disappears.
Right.
So there's this enormous overhang. And you're like, well, what do I do with my legs now?
Yeah,
like, where
right.
do I even put them?
Yeah.
And there happened to be a guy climbing up, because it's also quite a big popular climbing route.
Right.
And he said, you just have to dangle. So you just sort of put your sort of feet underneath it, and then like a spider, you sort of dangle down for the last 60 metres.
Did that make you feel less hardcore, seeing a guy just climbing up next to you?
And saying to him, what do I do?
Yes. And so, but it made a great story because it was, you know, facing a real genuine fear.
Yeah.
And so anything like that, any of those sort of jumping off a ledge on a rafting trip or like a skydive and stuff, I will seek that sort of stuff out because it makes a good story.
Yeah.
Well, I think that often just the fact that you're away from home can make you a little bit more adventurous anyway. Like, I'm not uncomfortable with heights. I'm uncomfortable with
falling.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? If I'm standing somewhere and I'm not going to fall, you know, there's a sheet of glass or whatever, no problems. And so the time that I went parasailing, I reserved the right until the last moment. I said, I'll go, I'll have a look at it, and then I'll tell you whether I'll do it or not. Because, you know, you essentially walk off the edge of a cliff, which is not a bright thing to do. And, you know, I actually thought I wouldn't do it. You know, I was kind of like, this ain't going to happen, this ain't going to happen. And I was talking to the head instructor and we were just chatting away and he seemed like a competent, confident man, probably pushing 40, you know, and possibly a bit older. And we were chatting and he was mentioning how he'd paraglided from, you know, Switzerland to Portugal or something insane.
Right.
And then I just asked him, so how long have you been doing this? And it was like, since 1978. It was like, I'm going with you.
Wow. Yeah. I'll take that guy.
So, and I did, and it was great.
Yeah.
So that's a huge factor, isn't it? Like, if I did a skydive recently, and when you chat, it's a tandem skydive, when you chat to the people that do that, they do it all day, every day. They've done thousands of jumps.
Yeah.
They do it on their weekends off. It's just another day.
Although
some
of them like to take the piss and say, oh, yeah, I've done this a couple of times.
You always get that little, like, banter at the start.
Yeah.
But it's just such a matter of fact feeling. And so if you're with someone who's safe or you're with, like, safe equipment, that certainly takes a lot of the. And that's, for me, why I could never do a bungee jump, because there's that sort of voluntary factor of throwing yourself off. Whereas for a skydive, you're sitting on a chair.
There's nothing voluntary about that.
Into place and you're just going.
And you're exactly.
Friend of mine got down to the ground. She was like, they don't give you a choice. Like, no, they don't. Once you're clipped into that guy,
you're going
out of the plane.
Right, And I think the really interesting thing about this, and I guess this comes back to the sort of mindfulness thing, is that, like, when you're doing one of those things, so when you're backing out over the ledge of a abseil or what have you, your mind is nowhere else apart from there. You know, you're not thinking about what happened yesterday. You're not thinking about what you're going to have for dinner tonight. You are totally focused on that particular time. And there's just not that many times when you're that present. And when I've spoken to people who do a lot of that stuff, that is that feeling they crave, is that total focus and that total of just being in the moment, you know, like climbers and base jumpers.
Yeah, sure.
And they go to ever-increasing risks to get that.
Yeah.
But it's a rare opportunity to do that, to get that in sort of everyday life.
Yeah. Do you think this is something that has changed you guys as people and the way you sort of live your lives in general? I know for me, you know, having that experience of being outside of my comfort zone and pushing boundaries, I think it's made me a lot more confident in the rest of my
life.
Just knowing that things that you take on are probably not going to be that bad, or at least you're going to come out the other side feeling better about yourself.
Oh, yeah. You do. I think confidence is a really good word because you don't have to be doing the sort of adventurous stuff we've just been talking about. Just that going to different countries, being in a place where you don't speak the language, handling money that you
Spending
don't
for
know.
Yourself,
yeah, you just develop a resilience and a trust in yourself. And it's a bit like what I was saying earlier about, you know, Ethiopia or Nicaragua. It's like, well, I don't know. I'll work it out when I get there. You know, it's not that hard. It's a foreign country. I can do this.
How about you?
I think definitely. It gives you a sense of confidence and a sort of self-assuredness. You know, I did that and I survived, and so I can probably get through some of this other stuff. And a lot of it, as you say, you can apply back to sort of everyday life when you come back to Sydney or wherever. And I think it's a good, I mean, and there's a million, you know, quotes about this, about feel the fear and do it anyway, yeah. and change happens at the edge of your comfort zone, and, yeah. and that stuff's
they
for...
They used to be posters, now they're memes.
Yeah, exactly. But that, and a lot of that, you know, sounds quite cliche, but it's yeah. there for a reason, and it yeah. is because that is where you change as a person, when you go and do something you didn't think you'd be able to do, and then you come back and you think, I survived that, and I don't know, it sort of swells your soul. You just feel better for trying those things.
Yeah, beautifully put.
Yeah, that should be on a t-shirt, shouldn't it? I'm swapping out the I'm available for, yeah, for swell your soul. Your soul.
Can I just say no?
Yeah.
That could go horribly wrong.
Yeah. Rob, that is inspirational, and I think it's also a good thing to end our episode on. So thank you, Rob and Uta, for joining me today.
It's been
a pleasure.
If you'd like to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. And we'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy.